might say, he was quite noticeable. And so one of the government police officer, a governor in the entourage of the minister, he told the Nawab, he said, there's this Hindu saint, and he's traveling everywhere, he's chanting, he's got all these followers. So, you know, he didn't say anything. And then a little while later, the same Muslim said to his police officer, I hear there's actually this Hindu saint. Do you know anything about him? And his police officer said, he's just some fanatic. And he's got about two or three followers. So there's no importance. But actually, this police officer, he actually understood that Lord Chaitanya was the Supreme Personality of God, and he was afraid to reveal the truth of Lord Chaitanya to the Muslim leader because he was afraid he would persecute him, which he would do. Practically any Hindus. And so the Muslim king, who knew all about Lord Chaitanya, said, why are you just calling him a fanatic? He's actually the Supreme Lord, and he's spreading the holy name of the Lord. This Muslim actually understood that. And he said, no one should interfere with his chanting and with his travels. And if anybody does, I will finish them. So in this way, he gave all sanction to Lord Chaitanya. And this was in the area called Ramakeli. I don't know if you know that area. It's just south of Puri. Not too far south of Puri. And that's where the government of Nawab Hussein Shah was set up. So Lord Chaitanya came there, not so much just to do his chanting, but to meet Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. And that was the first meeting he met them. And Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, when they saw Lord Chaitanya, they actually came, they snuck out in the very evening. Lord Chaitanya has actually understood that they were coming, so he was waiting for them underneath the tree. And they came with the straw between their teeth. And they paid full dandavats. And they explained in a very prayerful way how low they were. They were feeling so embarrassed because they had taken up the service of the Muslims. And they were just not only feeling so low, but they actually compared themselves to Jagai and Madai. Whereas Jagai and Madai, we understand from the past times, were so sinful. They committed practically every sin that was possible, except one. They never offended a Vaishnava. And because of that, they got the mercy of Lord Nityananda and the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is interesting to know, that the greatest of all offenses is Vaishnava Aparad. If one commits a Vaishnava Aparad, then one's spiritual life is checked at that point. And the only way to counteract that is to beg forgiveness for the Vaishnava and offer some service. In this way, one can rectify Vaishnava Aparad. So Jagai and Madai, they were so sinful. It's explained by Vrindavan Das Thakur in his Chaitanya Bhagavat that Yamaraj, who is the toll keeper of all the activities of the conditioned souls in the material world, he was employing what we call inflated staff in order to keep account of their records. Chandragupta was his main secretary. Chitragupta. Okay, Chitragupta. And he was checking on him and he was asking about them, and Chitragupta says, we are having so many scribes, and they're working 24 hours a day around the clock trying to keep account of the sinful activities in Jagai and Madai, and they're all exhausted, they're tired. They can't keep count. In fact, no one can keep count. In fact, I quit. So their sinful activities were unlimited. So Sanatan and Rupa Goswami were considering themselves more flawed. And this was not just some statement of You know, sometimes we speak in a very humble way, or we speak in a very way that is very nice, but because it's fashionable. It's fashionable to be humble, it's fashionable to be nice, but in our minds we're thinking something else. So that doesn't work. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, and they were actually feeling more lower than Jagai Madai. This was from their heart. They said Jagai Madai never took up the service of the Mohammedans. Just see our position. So Lord Chaitanya, he gave them their mercy, and then he gave them their blessings, and he says, very soon Krishna will bestow his mercy upon you. And they understood that soon they will be relieved from that government position. So they left, and Lord Chaitanya, he started to go to Vrindavan as he had planned, but then he turned around and went back to Puri. He never made that trip, because his actual reason to go to Vrindavan was not to go, but to actually to meet Rupa Sanatana Goswami at Ramakali. So he came back. So right after that, Rupa Goswami, he quit his post in the government. And he was very wealthy. He had collected so much wealth from that post that he divided his wealth. He had hundreds and thousands of gold coins. And he took his wealth and he went to one village in a nearby area, and he distributed, he took 50% of his wealth and he gave that away in order to propagate religious principles. He took the other 50 and divided it in half, and 25% for his personal expenses and 25% for emergency in the bank. So Srila Prabhupada writes that this is the standard formula that we should follow. 50% giving for religious principles, 25% and 25%. Of course, if you're a millionaire, you're not going to give $500,000 to the Hare Krishna movement. Not usually. But Prabhupada said this is a standard you can follow, but ultimately one should try to support religious principles by offering something. Because in the material world, one of the greatest attachments is money. Everyone's, especially in the West, everyone's attached to money, right? They say money is the honey. Do anything, beg, borrow, or steal, but get money. Whatever you can do. Lie, cheat, you know. Whatever you can do, but get money. And if you can do it, and if you get it by lying and cheating and stealing, you're considered Mahatma. Right? Look at, what's this guy's name? Donald Trump, right? Mahatma. Gambling casinos, right? What is that? It's all cheating, isn't it? Yeah. But it's considered to be glorious to be a good cheater. Right? You become famous by being a rogue. This is today's society, right? The more degraded you are, and the more intelligent you are to take your degradation and do it in such a way that it looks like it's okay, then you become hero, right? That's welcome to Kali Yuga. Right? If you're an honest, simple, you know, person trying to worship God and be, you know, do everything right, who cares? You know, nobody. Why don't you be like us? Probably some of your colleagues are saying, you know, they come around, you invite you to parties, and you know, and you say, well, I'm going to the temple. Going to the temple? What do you mean going to the temple? Why don't you come out to one of our parties? You know, get drunk like us. You know? Have some nice, you know, unmentionable foodstuffs. You know? So this is considered to be normal. And to be spiritual means to be abnormal. So it's not an easy thing. So Rupa Goswami did that, and then he left to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He traveled. So At the same, right around that same time, Sanatan Goswami, he decided, well, I'm not going to work for the government anymore. So he went to his home, and he just started reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And he was calling some of his friends, and they were just having Bhagavatam Katha. And he would speak from Bhagavatam. But he told the Nawab that I'm sick, that I can't come anymore because I'm sick, but after some time. But he wasn't at all sick, he was just reading Bhagavatam. So after a while, the Nawab was wondering, my leading minister, Sanatan, he's been sick for a long time. So he sent a physician to find out about him. And the physician came, and he came back, he said, he's not sick at all, he's just reading Srimad Bhagavatam, there's nothing wrong with him. So the Nawab, he was furious. So he came to the home of where Sanatha was staying, and he didn't even knock, he just walked right in, crashed through the door. He said, what are you doing? He says, your older brother, referring to himself, has big plans to give trouble to other living entities, and he needs your support. Because he was just a dacolite. And he would go out and conquer. He said, I have plans to conquer Orissa, and I need you to man the government. So Sanatan said, well, you are the supreme ruler, and of course is considered, at least theoretically, that the ruler is considered to be a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you have all power, you can do whatever you want to do, but I'm not coming back. So the Nawab was furious, so he called his guards and he told them to arrest him. So he put him in jail. So he was in jail. And Srupa Goswami learned, that, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there. So he sent a letter to Sanatan to somehow or other get out of jail and come and meet, and we'll both meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he deposited 10,000 gold coins with one merchant in the area where Sanatan was in jail. And he said, use these 10,000 gold coins in order to get yourself free from jail. So he was being held by one chokidar, who was a Muslim. And Sanatan Goswami, he started to speak and praise the chokidar. He said, actually, you are a great saint. And your father and my father, we are also, friends. So why are you giving me trouble as your younger brother? In fact, I have plans to go to Mecca on pilgrimage. And, he was a Muslim. So please release me from these chains and allow me to go. And here is 5,000 gold coins. These are yours if you release me. So this guard, he was a little bit attracted, but at the same time his mind wasn't changed. He said, if I let you go, then I will be punished. And the Nawab will punish me. So what is my position? I cannot do that. Sanatan Goswami said, don't worry. You just tell, you took Sanatan down to the banks of the river, and he had to evacuate, but while you turned your back, he jumped in with all this change, and he was washed away by the river. So he's finished. And then he put 2,000 more gold coins in front of the guard. So he became a little more enthusiastic. So he gave him 7,000 gold coins and he let him go. So then he went traveling. And while he was traveling, he met one servant whose name was Ishan. And Ishan was his personal servant. So they were on their way to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was traveling from the area of, right near Ramakeli, all the way up to Bengal, West Bengal, which was a long way. Lord Chaitanya was staying at the house of one devotee named Chandrasekhar, which is in the area of Navadvip now. And they stopped at a hotel one night. Now this hotel owner, he was a dacoit. In fact, he was a king of the dacoits. We were just talking about, getting robbed in hotels. So it's been going on for a while. It's nothing new. Probably the hotel owner probably knew who took your briefcase. He probably summoned the man at the right time. Hit the bell. And anyway. So this hotel owner, he consulted an astrologer and he said, yes, these men have a large treasure, gold coins. He said they have 8 gold coins with them. So the hotel was thinking, tonight I will, when they're asleep, I will kill them and take their money. So Sanatana Goswami was somewhat curious because the hoteler was so nice to him. And they say that too much devotion is a sign of a thief. If somebody is too nice and too devoted, that means that maybe they have another reason for their devotion. And sometimes it's like that. Somebody is acting one way, but in the back of their mind there's something else. So he approached his servant. He said, do you have any gold coins? And Ishan, he had 8 gold coins. He said, yes, I have 7 gold coins. He said, give them to me. He said, why are you carrying this death knell? Don't you realize it's dangerous? We could be attacked and killed at any time. So he took the 7 gold coins and he gave it to the hotel. He said, here, take this. He said, oh. He said, actually, tonight I had plans to rob and kill you. But now that you brought it to me, I see you're just a great saintly and generous person. And please, I don't even want them. You take them. He said, no, no. Actually, you should take them, because if you don't take them, someone else will kill me for them. So he gave them. He said, okay. Actually, I will give you all protection. I will give you some of my men, and they will help you get across the dangerous areas. So the hotel keeper became somewhat changed in heart because he saw the saintly character and the generosity of Sanatana Goswami. And then Sanatana Goswami went back to his servant Ishan. He said, do you have any more gold coins? He said, yes, I have 1. He didn't give him. He said, take that and go home. So he let his servant go, because he wasn't pleased at all with him. And first of all, he was carrying it, and then he didn't give him the whole 8. He gave him only 7. He was lying about 1. So he said, take that gold coin and go home. So then he traveled by himself through the forest, meeting all kinds of difficulties. Finally he came to the village of Hajipur. And in Hajipur lived his brother-in-law. Sanatana Goswami was one of 5 brothers, and they had 1 sister. So his sister was married to a man named Srikanta. And Srikanta was quite wealthy. So he welcomed Sanatana Goswami and he offered him a place to stay. But Sanatana Goswami said, no, I have no time. I actually want to go meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he said, here, take something. Here's a blanket. It's very cold at night. You'll need some kind of clothing. So he gave him his very expensive, very attractive blanket. So Sanatana took it. And he traveled. Finally, after days and days of traveling, not eating properly, not sleeping properly, not bathing properly, he came and he arrived at the home of Chandrasekhar in Navadvip. And Lord Chaitanya was there inside. So rather than going in, he just sat at the door. And Lord Chaitanya said to Chandrasekhar, he said, there's a devotee sitting at your door. Go ask him to come in. So Chandrasekhar went outside. He looked around. He saw Sanatana sitting there. And he came back and he said, my lord, there's no devotee there. There's just some Muslim beggar. Because he had been, you know, traveling for days, not bathing. He had a long beard, hair. Darvesh. Prabhupada says Darvesh. Another meaning for Darvesh means hippie. Hippie. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, that's not no Muslim beggar. That's Sanatana Goswami. He's a great devotee. Tell him to come in. So he welcomed Sanatana and he embraced him. And Lord Chaitanya said, ah, he was very happy that he had come. So he arranged for him to get shaved up, get his shave and cleaned up. And then Chandrasekhar offered him some nice clothes to wear. Sanatana Goswami said, no, actually I'm a mendicant, I'm in the renounced order of life. I should not wear expensive clothes. So Lord Chaitanya was very pleased. But Lord Chaitanya noticed that Sanatana Goswami still had this blanket that was given to him by his brother-in-law. It was a very costly blanket, and he kept looking at it. And Sanatana Goswami could understand Lord Chaitanya is not pleased at all with this blanket. And Lord Chaitanya said to him, no, this happened afterwards. Okay. So then he went out, and he went looking around, and he found one Bengali beggar sitting on the street. So he had an old torn blanket with all kinds of holes in it. It was dirty. So he came up to him, Sanatana, and said, here, please take my blanket and give me your own torn cloth. So the man said, why are you joking with me? Don't tease me like that. This is a very expensive, costly blanket. This is a rag I'm wearing. He said, no, please do me this favor. So he traded blankets with him. He went back. And when Lord Chaitanya saw that, immediately he said, yes, just as a physician is very enthusiastic to make sure that every trace of the disease is gone, similarly, that is important that all our material attachments go. So he instructed him that way in the science of Krishna consciousness, that any material attachments, again, lead us down the path of material life. So from then he instructed Sanatana Goswami in the science of Krishna consciousness. I'll tell you one story and then I'll end, because there are so many stories about Sanatana Goswami. If you like, I can tell stories all afternoon, but I don't know if we have that much time. This one story is very instructive. And Lord Chaitanya instructed Sanatana Goswami in the science of Krishna consciousness. If you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, and there's a chapter, and it's called Lord Chaitanya Instructs Sanatana Goswami, which is the basis of our philosophy in Krishna consciousness. The teachings that Lord Chaitanya gave to Rupa Goswami and to Sanatana Goswami is the foundation of our whole philosophy in Krishna consciousness, and they're mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he instructed him the relationship between the soul and God, the different types of avatars, the different manifestations of Krishna's personality, different aspects, the different incarnations, the different categories of incarnations, like a very scientific, deep understanding. And then he told them one little story. The story of an astrologer whose name was Sarvagya. Now Sarvagya was traveling, and he came to the house of a very poor man. And when he came to the house of a poor man, he said to this poor man, he said, actually, my dear sir, you are very rich. You're not actually very poor. Your father, he was very wealthy, but he died in a foreign place. He has left you a great treasure. And that treasure is in your own backyard. But in looking for that treasure, don't dig on the southern side. Because if you dig on the southern side, you'll be attacked by drones and wasps. And don't dig on the western side, because if you dig on the western side, you'll be attacked by a ghost. And don't dig on the northern side, because if you do, you'll be devoured by a big black snake. But if you take a little dirt away from the eastern side, you will find the treasure. So then he went on to explain that the southern side represents Karmakanda, the ritualistic activities in the Vedas, where people perform pujas and rituals in order to get better material situations. And they're like being stung by drones and wasps. To perform the rules and regulations of the Karmakanda, it's simply, if you do everything right except one thing, everything's wrong. And what is the results of Karmakanda? You get elevation to the higher planets. You get a better material relationship, a better material facility. So the results of Karmakanda is like all you get is more pain, being stung by wasps and drones. And the southern side, then the western side, where there are a ghost, is Gyanakanda. Philosophical speculation, Hare Krishna, on the absolute truth in order to become free from the material miseries. Liberation engaged in by the impersonalists and the Mayavadis. He said this is like being haunted by a ghost. Because what does a ghost do? A ghost just simply disturbs one's mind. Have you ever been troubled by a ghost? There are ghosts. In fact, many houses, even sometimes in ISKCON we buy a new temple. It's an old house or it's a building, and we realize that that building has got occupancies we can't see. It's personalities. And ghosts give a lot of trouble. Because what is a ghost? A ghost is a soul in a subtle body that has no gross body. So it has to find a gross body in order to fulfill its desires, because desires exist in the subtle body, in mind, intelligence, and ego. And so in this way, a ghost is always causing trouble to everyone. So Gyanakanda, you know, simply philosophical, you know, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this, you know, doing all kinds of rituals, performing all kinds of austerities. It just simply disturbs the mind. There's no peace. There's no peace of mind in that. So just like a ghost causes agitation of the mind, engaging in the process of Gyanakanda is the same thing. So then he went on to say, and don't dig on the northern side, because if you do, you'll be devoured by a snake. So what is that snake? The snake represents the yogis, or the tapasis, who perform great austerities and penances in order to get great power. They acquire the mystic cities. This is the mystic yoga perfection. Where one can be lighter than the lightest, smaller than the smallest. And there's yogis who can go through keyholes. There's yogis who can fly in the sky. There's yogis who can manifest some material item from somewhere in the universe. Just like there's one very popular yogi in South India today. He has a large bottle and they think he's God. Because he can go, he can just from his hand, he can just manifest something. It's called Prapti City. But it's just, all it is magic. It's mind over matter. If you know the science, you can do it. Even the great Houdini, who's a Western magician, they used to lock him in a box and put chains on the box and throw the box in the ocean and he would come out somewhere else. Because he knew the science of, you know, how to manipulate matter through the power of mind. It's mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. There's 18 mystic powers, 10 primary and, no, 8 primary and 10 secondary mystic powers. So if you apply yourself, you can also have develop these mystic powers. But what is the goal of such persons? To become powerful, to gain followers, to be known, to have some facility for enjoyment in the material world. So he said, don't dig on the northern side, because you'll be, it's like being devoured by a black snake. What does that mean? It means your spiritual life is finished. Although we see people have these powers, ultimately, when it comes to surrendering to God, they don't surrender to God. And spiritual life begins when one surrenders to God. That's the beginning of spiritual life. But to speak about actually developing real spiritual life means actually continuing that surrendering process day by day. So yogis, they never surrender to God. They want to be God, or they want to act like God. He said, but if you go to the eastern side, take a little dirt away from there, and then this is bhakti. And bhakti is the path, ultimately, of the soul's relationship with God. Karma yoga, jnana yoga, hatha yoga, all these yogas ultimately are rungs on the ladder that help the one to elevate one to a better situation. But ultimately, it's all leading up to the process of bhakti, because bhakti is the nature of the heart. The soul ultimately feels completely satisfied only when it can love. And that love is meant for God. When we love God, that is actually bhakti yoga. And love, of course, means to do something for God and that pleases God. Ayabhilasita sunya jnana karma anavrita anukulena krishna silanam bhakti uttama. That pure devotion or love must be free from philosophical speculation on the absolute truth, desire for fruit of gain, and ultimately anukulena krishna silanam, which means in relationship to Krishna with the desire to please Krishna. So it's not that the living entity can do anything and call it bhakti. It's just like if your husband comes home and he likes a certain kind of food and you like a certain kind of food, so you cook what you like and you offer it to him and say, this is for you. No, it's for you. That's bhakti for... It's a different kind of bhakti. this is a small example, but it gives an idea that bhakti means to please the person you're trying to love by doing the thing that pleases them. Now that is bhakti yoga. So Sanatan Goswami actually he established one temple in Vrindavan, which is called Madan Mohan Temple. Maybe some of you have seen it. If you go to Vrindavan, it is one of the largest temples that is noticeable. It has a big spiral dome that goes, 70 feet high. And the deity that was established by Sanatana Goswami, Sri Madan Mohan, is in that particular temple. The story of Madan Mohan is very, very interesting. Madan Mohan deity was given by Sanatana Goswami in a very indirect way. One of Lord Chaitanya's principal associates and also an aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead was Sri Advaita Acharya. And Sri Advaita Acharya had one deity. And he entrusted this deity to one very saintly and pious Brahmin. Now this deity was so liked by this Brahmin that this Brahmin would take his deity and he would treat it like one of the family members. So when all the family would sit down to take prasadam, he would bring the deity to sit with the family. They would all, the deity would be there like one of the children. And he actually had that kind of relationship with this deity. This Brahmin was so saintly, and he actually saw this deity as being in the mood of vatsalya ras, or parental affection. So he treated, just like you treat your child in a certain way as a child, he treated this deity as his child. But Sanatana Goswami, who was also a friend of this one Brahmin, he couldn't understand, why are you treating a deity? In his mind he was thinking like this. He didn't say anything out. Why are you treating the deity like a family member? You're supposed to put the deity in your worship and you do the puja. You don't bring him to the table and sit him down in the chair with you. So he was a little bit concerned. And so he didn't say anything. And so one night, this deity appeared into the dream of both Sanatana Goswami and the Brahmin simultaneously. And into the Sanatana Goswami's dream, he said, actually, I'm very much pleased by the worship of this Brahmin. So don't take any exception with his way of dealing with me. And then he appeared in the dream of the Brahman. He said, actually, I'm very much attracted to the devotion of Sanatan Goswami, so you should give him to me. Give me to him. And so that night, the next day, they met and they exchanged their dreams. And he apologized for criticizing, at least in his mind, that he was taking exception with the way he had worshipped this particular deity. But the Brahmin said, actually, the Lord has told me that he wants to go with you. But he said, how can I accept this deity? I have nothing. I'm a mendicant. I live underneath the tree. I don't have anything. How would I take care of this deity? No, you should keep him. So he refused. So that night, the next night, the deity again appeared in the dream and said, give me the Sanatan. I want to go. I don't care what he has or doesn't have. In so many ways. And the Lord doesn't speak like that, but anyway. He was very, very enthusiastic to be with Sanatan Goswami. So the next day, again, he presented it. And Sanatan accepted, because the deity also appeared to him and said, please take me. Very much attracted. So Sanatan was living under a tree, and he would do his bhajan by chanting and whatever else. And he would just beg a madukari. He would beg a little roti or some, what else? Mostly people give you rotis, right? That's what they give you when you beg, right? Mostly rotis. Sometimes they give you some broken rice, right? So he would offer his deity, you know, whatever they he got. So one day he offered, there was some chapati. So he offered the deity, he had the deity living in a tree, because that's the only thing he could provide. He was living underneath the tree, so he put the deity in the tree. So one day he offered one chapati to his deity. So the deity actually spoke to him, and he said, you're giving me chapati, but this chapati doesn't have any salt in it. So how can I eat a dry chapati without any salt? The Lord told him that. So Sanatana Goswami said, what do you expect? I'm a beggar, I don't have anything. Today you want salt, tomorrow you want something else. So you're just going to have to accept the fact that that's all I have. So the deity said, all right, what can I do? I'm a deity. He had a very deep relationship with his deity. It wasn't like our relationship. It's a little, he was such a pure soul that he could actually talk to his deity. And so one time, there was this very rich merchant. He was a salt merchant, and he was carrying a very big load of salt. He was on his way to Vrindavan to exchange his salt for some cash or money, rupees. But when he came to the area where Sanatan Goswami was, his boat got stuck in the river due to the river being shallow. And so he was stuck. He couldn't go anywhere. So he was trying like anything to get his boat out, but he couldn't get it out. He had all this valuable salt on the boat. Sometimes they say, and there's an old saying in America, worth your weight in salt. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard that slang saying? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Then years ago, salt was considered to be very valuable. Nowadays, you know, who cares? You spill it on the ground, you just sweep it up. Right? Nobody cares about salt. But years ago, it had some value, salt. So people that noticed his plight, that his boat was stuck, they said, you should go see Sanatan Goswami. Go talk to him, maybe he can help you. So he came, and he understood Sanatan was a very holy man, so he paid his respects. He said, can you help me? My boat is stuck. He said, well, I can't help you, but if you go and see Modan Mohan, my deity, and pray to him, maybe he can help you. So he went. He offers his respectful obeisances to the deity in the tree. And he was wondering, gee, this man has nothing. And Didi's living in the trees, living under a tree, only has kamandalu, you know, just a loincloth. So he prayed seriously to the deity, you know, get my boat out. It's not a prayer you ordinarily offer to the Lord, but, you know, he was praying like that. So just the next day, somehow or other, the tide started to rise and the boat was out. So he went and he left and he took his boat and went to Vrindavan, sold all his salt and had a large amount of wealth. And he was so appreciative that he came back to Sanatana Goswami and he said, I'd like to do some service for you. I'd like to offer you some money. He said, well, I don't have any need for money, but if you like, you can do some service for Madhava.
Oh, my God.
Spoken about quite often, but never emphasized enough.